is a totally dead artifact, but in the hands of millions of people, it's probably the only source of power to change the unjust order in which we live. And the first time when I heard about life patenting, biotechnology, genetic engineering, at a meeting, I was invited on agriculture, and I had no idea there's this whole world being created. At the press conference immediately after the meeting, I was asked, is there anything that you can do, you know, I mean, in this period of total monopoly and total manipulation, what can people do? And I immediately thought of Gandhi's spinning wheel, and I said, if Gandhi could use the tiny spinning wheel to reclaim the commons, reclaim people's capacity, then maybe in that little seed that's available across the world, in people's farms, in cultures in diverse ways, cultures as diverse as the seeds they protect, maybe that seed is the mobilizing metaphor as well as the material for dealing with keeping life free in a period of life's colonization. And for this, I very often derive a lot of inspiration from a very touching Palestinian poem, which I'd like to conclude. It's called The Seed Keepers. Burn our land, burn our dreams, pour acid on our songs, cover with sawdust the blood of our massacred people, muffle with your technology the screams of all that is free, wild, and indigenous. Destroy our grass and soil, raise to the ground every farm and every village our ancestors had built, every tree, every home, every book, every law, and all the equity and harmony. Flatten with your bombs every valley, erase with your edicts our past, our literature, our metaphor. Denude the forests and the earth, till no insect, no bird, no word can find a place to hide. Do that and more. I do not fear your tyranny. I do not despair ever, for I guard one seed, a little live seed, that I shall safeguard and plant again.
That was Vandana Shiva on the recovery of the commons. She spoke at Colorado College in Colorado Springs. Vandana Shiva is an internationally renowned voice for sustainable development and social justice. She's director of the Research Foundation for Science, Technology, and Natural Resource Policy in New Delhi. This program is produced by Alternative Radio, an unembedded award-winning weekly series based in Boulder, Colorado, celebrating 30 years of independent broadcasting. We feature progressive voices rarely heard elsewhere, such as Chris Hedges, David Corton, Michelle Alexander, Arundhati Roy, Cornel West, Noam Chomsky, and Tariq Ali. We have a series of Vandana Shiva programs. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. To place a credit card order for a CD, MP3, or written transcript of today's program, Vandana Shiva on the Recovery of the Commons, call us at 1-800-444-1977. Again, that number is 1-800-444-1977. Or you can order on our website, alternativeradio.org. The Kronos Quartet performs our theme music. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening. I'm David Barsamian, host of Alternative Radio, heard every Tuesday morning at 9 on KBOO. KBOO currently has a one-to-one match for all new and increasing members. If you become a member at this time or increase your donation over last year, your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $10,000 by a group of generous donors and foundations. Consider becoming a monthly sustaining member. This can be set up easily and securely online. Go to kboo.fm/support to get your donation matched today.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, and the time is 10:03. Coming up next on Air Cascadia, Chris Andre speaks with Dr. John Talberth of the Center for Sustainable Economy about the new report linking clear-cutting in Oregon to global warming pollution. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, Vijay Prashad discusses how Western terrorism in the Middle East drives terrorism against the West. Also, American Indian Movement founder Bill Means weighs in on federal agents canceling an art exhibition by Native American political prisoner Leonard Peltier. And KJ No reports on the right-wing South Korean government crackdown on organized labor.
My guest is John Talberth. He is the president and senior economist with the Center for Sustainable Economy. And there is a new report out on industrial forest practices, could be Oregon's second largest source of greenhouse gas emissions. That is the name of the report. And as many people already know, Oregon is not quite as green as we like to think, as we are fond of announcing to the tourism trade. John, welcome to the KBOO airwaves.
Thanks, Chris, for having me on the show.
Well, this report is literally just out. And can you just run through briefly for our listeners what the message, the main primary message of the is in this report?
Well, sure. Clear cutting, as we all know, is a barbaric forest practice that is a disaster for fish, wildlife, water quality, and soils. So the science on that is pretty compelling, and that's already on the table. This report demonstrates that clear cutting is also a disaster for Oregon's climate agenda, not only because of the substantial greenhouse gas emissions it generates, but also because it makes vast swaths of Oregon's landscape highly susceptible to wildfires, insects, disease, drought, landslides, floods, and warming waters that kill fish. So carbon dioxide emissions from clear cutting, if it's calculated correctly, would make the timber industry the second largest source of greenhouse gas emissions in the state, second only to the transportation sector. And these emissions are equivalent to 2 to 4 million new cars on the road or emissions of 7 coal-fired power plants. So this is a big issue.
The approach that many in the timber industry take is, well, what can be done to mitigate the effect of climate change? I would argue that it's habitat collapse, because climate is part of our habitat, and must all of these factors have to be considered as one picture, one planet. What is really alarming is the flawed, this is underlined in the what I'm reading here, a flawed international greenhouse gas accounting protocol. What measures can be taken in the future to bring people around to seeing that it's overconsumption that we should be addressing, not so much as the effects, but it's the massive overconsumption of resources that has put us in this position?
Well, one of the biggest source of greenhouse gas emissions from industrial forest lands are the clear cuts that are put in place to generate short-lived products such as paper and cardboard and packaging. These are the things that consumption of these products exacerbates global warming, because these are the products that decay fastest in the landfills and contribute to greenhouse gas emissions. So it's the short rotation clear cutting to produce these short-lived, low-value wood and paper products that is driving the emissions. And of course, that's all driven by consumption. So you're correct in that consumers should be far more aware of the effects of consuming these products on the climate. And we're hoping this report will help elevate that awareness.
I want to ask you a question from a purely an economic standpoint, and that would be, we know that healthy economies depend on growth, and yet growth has become this cancerous, terrible disease to not just the environment, but indeed to our economy. So, and that's something people just don't like to admit. But what measures do you see being taken? What about shifting from growth in quantity of things produced, products produced, to quality? You were just talking about these short-term, fast money sort of products that are being made. And if some means of control, but reports such as these used to back up, you were talking about legislation, a ballot measure perhaps. Is there, how would we be able to accomplish that?
Well, there's a lot of things in what you just said. So first of all, yeah, I completely agree. This idea of growth has to be revisited. And we can start by just simply asking the question, growth in what and for whom? And once you start looking at growth through those lenses, it kind of breaks down that, oh, yeah, we need to grow things like knowledge and education and training of our communities and our population. We don't need to grow consumption of paper products and the physical dimensions of the economic system. So we have to talk about qualitative growth in well-being and not growth in consumption. Secondly, there's the equity dimension, growth for whom. As you know, most of the world's wealth is concentrated in the hands of the top 1%, and it's, you know, growth in the 1% consumption of goods and services is not what we should be doing economy-wide. We should be looking at growth in well-being for the bottom 99%, especially the bottom 20% of the population. So there's that issue. Now, getting back to your question about what we can do about Oregon Forest Practices Act, there has been just kind of a wall that the environmental community and others have not been able to scale over the past 30 years, and that's making changes in the governing legislation in the legislature. The legislature is totally bought off by timber industry representatives and timber interests. They're the only ones that actually show up day-to-day in the legislature. They're the ones that actually show up consistently at the hearings because they've got money in the game. These are international timber corporations that are driving policy in the legislature. So we need to forget about the legislature at this point and move quickly towards a ballot measure that connects citizens with the reality on the ground of how horrific these practices are and how there are economically viable alternatives to clear-cutting out there that should be the law and should be the rule, not the exception.
So you talk about alternatives to clear-cutting. I put, my personal feeling is that a moratorium would be the best solution to a great many problems. Right now, I think shifting to other types of economies. I mean, the prospect of growing legal marijuana now in Oregon, it seems to be a boom that many people are cashing in on, and right now. And if that can happen, surely other things that perhaps require a bit more imagination than that one, but there have to be other ways of growing the economy than resorting to practices that are literally killing us. Where do you feel it's the most likely success to be to lie in confronting the problem of stopping clear cutting and the rest of this whole rest of the cascading effects of the practice?
Well, the reality and what the timber industry doesn't want people to know is that there's plenty of smart small-scale foresters in the state who are using scientifically based techniques of sustainable harvesting that are actually better at earning revenues for landowner over the long run than the short rotation techniques that are in place in industrial forest lands. selective logging and small tax cuts and long rotations where you grow bigger trees that are more valuable, that's the way we need to go in the future, and those practices should be the rule, not the exception. The problem is that 30 to 40% of the forest landscape is now owned by these international investment companies whose time horizon on making money is like 10 to 15 years. So they're under this boat of just simply liquidating, as they call it, their forest assets and clear cutting on a vast scale to earn short-term revenues for their investors rather than long-term benefits for Oregonians and the communities and the economy here. So that's what we hope, that these kind of techniques will be scaled up in response to this report and the other critiques of clear cutting, because there is a path forward that's good for the economy, good for the climate, and good for the environment.
You write also then that is absolutely the direction that Oregon ought to be heading, and because whether we have is justified or not, whether we've earned it or not, Oregon nonetheless is seen as a leader as far as green industry, green sustainable projects is concerned, and the rest of the country does tend to look to Oregon as a leader in that area. But how long we're going to maintain that illusion is anybody's guess. What you write, the report that was submitted to the Oregon Global Warming Commission, Governor Kate Brown and the Board of Forestry and key legislators, the report has been submitted to the above. Kate Brown is in really the key position here on many of the decisions. What has she shown in the past to be her tendency is when it comes to putting into practice findings of report.